Peter Lanola.
Hi, family. I'm Lanola, and I'm an addict. And this is my first time being here, too. And I'm going to tell you something. I have never been in front of this many people in my life. Now, I am scared to life. You know, I stop saying scared to death all the time, you know. But anyway, I'm one of these people that have a very long story, because it has been one hell of a long journey for me, you know. I can't even remember when I even picked up my first drink, what have you, you know. But I know when I was a little girl, and I grew up on California Street in Northwest. And I remember in my family, they used to party and do a lot of drinking and playing numbers. And I remember after the party, me and my little brother, who was also in the fellowship, we would drink whatever was left in the bottle and just go around and have a great time, you know. I didn't realize at that time, and I found out since I've been in here, that really I was just kind of going through a basic training for N.A. Really, that's what it was, you know. I learned early on when I was going up on California Street how to steal, how to lie, how to be with gangs, you know, not to go to school, the whole nine yards. And I did come from a good family, even though they had all that stuff going on. You know, the neighborhood, it was pretty good, except for Mr. Fatback, who was a child molester. And it seemed like it was tolerated. And he molested me also, along with my girlfriends. And for some reason, I don't know why, he was known in the community, but it seemed like nobody bothered him about. Nobody arrests nowadays, you know. You got to register for that kind of stuff, especially if you get busted for it, you know. But at any rate, because of the things that I went through as a child, and I was the oldest of three, and I always felt like I had to do everything. I had to set an example and all that, you know. I got tired of that, even as a young kid. So I like going out, hanging out with my friends in the block, robbing people's trees with fruit on it and all that, you know, and little apple trees, stealing funny books, and, you know, I like that kind of stuff. So, you know, and part of that, and I look back at it, even being in N.A., you know, I like being around my crowd type of people, you know. And oddly enough, after going through so many years of abuse out there, and I don't even want to go through all of it because I don't want myself to feel bad at times. You know, if you talk too much about negative stuff, you can make yourself depressed. And I'm not about being depressed today, about nothing. You know, I just believe that life is good. Regardless of what happens, life is still good. Because I remember how horrible it was when I was out there on 14th and T. You know, that corner, and on Corkin Street. Now I get real humble if I needed some drugs, you know. But if from the first time I smoked a reefer, it didn't take me but about 2 years, and I was shooting dope. I'm sitting around with my buddies, and that's what we do, and listen to music with the TV on. And that's the way it was. But eventually, something about that narcotic, it took away all the pain that I had gone through. Because I had a baby when I was 16. I had to give up for adoption. I was very promiscuous. I wanted to feel like I was loved. And not that my parents didn't love me. It's just that I wanted certain things that they weren't able to afford to give me. And because of that, I kind of looked outside of my family for love, especially for men. And it really got bad when I got to be a teenager. Because, honey, if I saw a guy and he looked good, pretty eyes, wore a Dob hat, Nelson loafers, and foot joint shoes, I had to have him. I had to have him, you know. And I hurt behind that. I always ended up on the short end. Because, see, they really liked other kind of girls that, you know, were nice girls and all that. I never was a goody two-shoes, and I never was, growing up being a tomboy. But like I said, I was introduced to drugs, and in a very short time, I had gotten really addicted to heroin. And part of it was due because I had a boyfriend that I actually didn't like that much, but he dressed nice. And so I let him shoot me up. And eventually, you know, I began to lose things like the car, moved up there on 13th Street, right where the narcotics were, so I'd be close by, you know, and where all the crime was, so I could just walk down to 14th and U, where everything was happening. And for a while, it wasn't too bad until my old man got busted and had to go back to jail and do 10 years of backup time. And I was scared to death because I was out there by myself, and I felt vulnerable. And I was vulnerable, for real. But I learned early on from an old prostitute. She took me out with her one night. And I had never done this before. I had never sold my body before. And I'm going to tell you, when I finally did, I asked, how do you do it? And she said, you just ask the men, are they sporting? Are they sporting? And if they are, then you can take them to so-and-so, the white law, or whatever, you know, and do what needs to be done. And that's the way I live. Because of that lifestyle that I had, I didn't get that virus, but I picked up another. And I didn't know it, and I lived it with it for years. And so eventually I went. During that time, I would occasionally go and try to get some dry time. And I would go into St. Eve for, you know, 28-day program or what have you. And whenever I went, I always came out with another dude. And it never lasted long, because they was like me. When we got out, they actually wanted me to hustle and keep them high. That wasn't going to happen. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. And so I had to put them out of my house. You can't hustle, you can't stay here. You know. But somehow, through it all, I know the day that God was really with me, because, like I said, I went through some horrible stuff, the guns up to the head, hanging out with the dudes that robbed, and I was scared of them, really, but I used to try to act like I was a bad chick. But really, I was afraid the whole time, and like I said, I learned all that doing that. You just have to learn how to survive, and I am that, a survivor today. Some of the skills that I got out there just for survival, I've had to use them while in recovery, you know. Some of the things, I've just turned them around to a positive way. And survival is one of the things that I'm just grateful. But more importantly, I know my high power has been with me the whole time. Because I did believe in God, but I didn't trust him. Just didn't trust him. Too much bad stuff had happened to me. And I tried religion, especially when I took that geographical cure, and I moved to California. But like a good addict, I also took me, and so I sought out those people who were just like me. And I remember the boyfriend I had, he was fresh out of jail, and let him move in a short period of time, and I told him, don't sell cocaine, get yourself some reefer. And a big thing of reefer, you know. I'm thinking, you ain't going to get as much time, because you eventually going to get busted, you know. And, Cheryl, he came in one day, and he said, ooh, you got to try this. I said, what's that? He said, this is a freebase. You know, people's freebasing before you was doing, calling it crack, you know. I took one hit. I was off to the races. And I chased that feeling for about 15 years, all told. That one feeling. Because, see, it reminded me of shooting a speedball. But I didn't have to put it in my veins. But that, too, I mean, nothing took me down like that thing there. And, you know, the thing about it, I wasn't bold enough to go out and you know, do some stealing and stuff. Because I learned how to steal and, you know, shoplift from friends around Rosedale, the playground and all that. And but that crack, ain't never had nothing that had me act that crazy. And see, look, when you got high with me, you couldn't be around me, because I couldn't shut up. I would fuck your high up. You had to put me out. That's a shame to be put out of a crack house. I couldn't stop myself. Because I'd be all right for a minute, and then I'd think of something else to say. And go on and on, and just, you know. But, like I said, it's been a long, long journey. And what I did was, I went into this program called Last Renaissance on the grounds of St. Neat Hospital. I'd been in St. Neat before. But this time, I had planned on getting clean because my boyfriend was going away again. That one that had the 10 years back up. And I remember his sister told me about going. She said, if you really want to get clean, you'll go in this program, and I'm going to tell you, it's hard. I didn't know nothing about encounters and all that. I caught hell up in there. Because I remember the first night, we had a meeting up in there, and it was okay. It was pretty nice. But then afterwards, it seemed like the bell rang. Everybody started cleaning up the place real fast. And then this guy told me, hit my walls over here. I said, you can't talk to me like that. I didn't know that's how the program worked. They was trying to kick up feelings on me. So, you know, I would do something like that, and they have an issue for an encounter group, you know. And eventually I caught on to how it worked. And, in fact, I graduated from that drug program. And look, let me tell you something. What I did was I started drinking while I was in reentry. That's what we did. You know, as long as I wasn't picking up no dope, they said, you know, it was okay. But what I didn't realize at that time, and I found out since then, it's the same disease. I never dealt with anything. I never knew about character defects. What I did learn to do is identify feelings. I could do that. But I never went any farther than that. Never got into the spiritual realm of what was wrong with my soul when I was coming up. You know, I had a soul disease. Some people call it a feeling disease. But it had been festering for years, and I didn't know. And I would go to church occasionally. I would show up and repent. And it would be okay for a while, you know. I was a fake and a phony for a long time, you know, a long time. And like I said, I went in reentry, and I knew my director was messing with dope. I remember when I would go out on weekends, and one weekend he told me, you can't go nowhere. And I'm like, for what? You know? And he and I got into an argument. I said, well, he's shooting dope anyway. Let me get the hell on out of here. And that's what I did. And it took me a long time to graduate. I eventually came back, and I did. But from there, that's when I took that journey to California and found those other people, too. But the thing is, I guess in 1987 is when I finally sought some help just for the drinking. I was drinking like I couldn't stop. It was the same thing as shooting dope. I could not stop. You know, I was on that train, you know, not a train, but they call it that boat that went down, you know, that big one. I just changed seat on that joint. That's all. That's all I did. And but the good thing is that I plugged in and I got in touch with the 12 steps. And they told me there, you know, you need to be in NA more than here, you know. And finally, I said, they don't know what they're talking about, you know. Not really when it comes to me, because I felt like I was unique. But at any rate, I did work through the steps, all of them. And I began to sponsor people. I sponsored this one young lady who had 10 years and went back out. And she was smoking crack and stuff and went back out. And so I decided, well, to go to the NA meeting to support her. And when I got in the meeting, I was just overwhelmed with love. something happened to me when I came into meetings, and I can't even explain it to today. You know, this is where I had needed to belong all this time, and I didn't know it. But see, it's my journey. God put me on this journey. I had to get here because that's where the real suffering, the years of suffering were. And I had to deal with that. And I'm so grateful that I did go through those steps because now I can help somebody else get through. It doesn't matter. And you all said it. You told me that's a drug too. That is a drug. But today, you know, my life is so much better. I've been through a whole lot, even in here, getting sick. But I called on those steps when I caught hep C. And they told me my liver was gone and that I'd have to have a transplant. And then I got on that old list that they got. You got to wait for years to get a get an organ. I got mine in about a year. Went up to Philadelphia, got the liver. I got a man's liver, and I haven't grown a mustache. My voice ain't changed. I'm still me, you know? And I'm still kicking at 71. I'll be 72 this year. Yeah. I'm still rolling, you know? So I believe God saved me for a reason, to be in places just like this right now, you know? And I believe in greater purpose. I don't know how long he's going to keep me here, but while I'm here, let me be the servant that I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be here. And I felt like if when I was first asked, oh, no, you don't want me up there. You know. And I felt scared, but I always go to my higher power first. When I'm upset and I can't think and I'm scared, I always go back to that same power that brought me to these rooms and have kept me through all the misery that I went through, not so I could feel bad about myself, simply so that I can help another suffering addict. And you know, I look at it now, you know, there's so many people using heroin, I don't know what all, K2, fentanyl, you name, they dying left and right. So I feel like I got even more purpose today. And I pray to God that I help somebody today. You know, you can go through it. There isn't anything that can happen in life that we can't get through together. An old timer told me that, and that has always been with me. There isn't anything. Life is what you make it. But you can't do it without God and people. Because God works through people. So, you know, is this you a newcomer? I said, open your mind, give yourself a chance. You know, I didn't think I was too bad when I got here. I said, I work at Georgetown University. I'm an accountant and all that. You know, it's not too much wrong with me. No, there's a hell of a lot wrong with me. I didn't know how sick I was. You know, I really did. So, how much time do I have? Oh, I got 3 minutes. Okay. Yeah. All I can say is, you know, that I'm grateful and I keep an attitude of gratitude because I know that a grateful addict is a clean addict, and that is just the truth. I still go to meetings after all these years that I've been in here. And I came in the rooms in November 4th, 1987. And actually thought there was nothing wrong with me, you know. This is how insidious the disease of addiction is. It will tell you that you're okay and I'm not that bad. So if you feel like this is all some bullshit, you can go back out there and do some more research. Nothing has gotten better. I ain't never seen nobody come back in here and say, girl, it was good. Well, you know, if that's the case, why are you back in here? If it was so good. You know, we have the disease of addiction, and that's okay. I deal with it. You know, because I used to go through that, why me? You know, and then y'all told me, why not me? And I've accepted it today. Because some of us are not to use nothing. Not God's children. We don't use anything. So anyway, that's enough out of me. And like I said, you know, I hope that I've helped somebody today. And if you got doubts about whether or not you belong here, just check your record and be honest. Thanks for letting me share.